McLean County Museum of History librarian Bill Kemp's new collection of stories he's written for the Pantograph reveal issues from McLean County's past that still reverberate today, albeit in different form. Volume 2 of Bill Kemp's Pages from the Past covers a variety of people and events, including McLean County's history with hemp, railroads, and JCPenney. He also talked to GLT's John Norton about McLean County's history of racial segregation in schools, including a famous court case in the late 1800s, interesting because it was not arguing on racial grounds, but on finance.
Chase v. Stevenson was an early civil rights case relating to education that has its origin in McLean County. It was a small one-room school in outside of Danvers. There were several rural black families living in the area, which was not unusual for the time. African Americans, though they were never particularly numerous in rural McLean County, there were African American farmhands in some smaller communities. There were African American barbers. So certain areas of the county were known to have small pockets of African Americans, Danvers being one of them. So there were several African American children wanting to attend this one-room school. The local school board decided it was best that they create a separate school for these few black children. Several taxpayers within the one-room school district then were upset over the fact that, in effect, this was costing them money. In effect, they were paying for two schools when one school would be more than sufficient for the number of children in the school district. So the case begins in the McLean County Circuit Court. The case then ends up in the Illinois Supreme Court and is known as kind of an early test case for school segregation. Although the case is really argued on the basis of finance, not so much in the issue of race or equality or civil rights.
Right.
So the main issue was really that taxpayers within the district believed that the school district was being unfair to them because it was making them pay for an additional second school when one was not needed.
They won the case, right?
Correct, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how, it'd be almost a half a century later when housing covenants and neighborhood associations back then, they were trying to exclude especially African Americans on that exact basis because property values would go down, right?
We tend to forget a lot of some of the darker chapters in local history. For example, in the post-World War II era, one of the things celebrated in American culture and history, as it should be, is the GI Bill, allowing middle-class, working-class, former servicemen, GIs, right, to begin the family dream of owning a home and starting a family in, oftentimes, kind of like a Levittown subdivision, a new subdivision, large backyards, playground equipment, a lot of young families. We had plenty of neighborhoods such as that in Bloomington and Normal. Unfortunately, locally, as was the case in much of America, even though the GI Bill did not restrict anybody because of race, local practices, that is local bankers, local realtors, local folk, community leaders, really ensured that African Americans were going to be limited in their ability to purchase new homes in these new post-war subdivisions. So even though on paper, in theory, African Americans could exercise some measure of equality when it came to housing, there was nothing like that in Bloomington Normal until the mid to late 60s, if not later, and we still have problems in this community today.
You're listening to GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. We're talking with McLean County Museum of History librarian Bill Kemp. His brand new book is Pages from the Past, a collection of stories from the Sunday Pantograph, which he contributes to regularly. Let's talk about marijuana and hemp and how that's back in the news big time because a lot of people want to legalize the use of marijuana. And some are saying there's a big difference between marijuana and hemp. But McLean County has a really interesting hemp history.
During the World War II era, Lexington was the regional or local center for wartime cultivation of hemp. Hemp was needed during the war as we lost our supply of fiber in the Pacific for rope and cordage for the Navy, for shroud lines and harnesses for airborne troops. Lexington became the center. Area farmers then began to grow hemp, and there was a local processing mill just outside of Lexington to process hemp into kind of a rough form then, which was shipped outside of the area then to be further processed. So one of the slogans at the time was, "You were were going to hang Hitler with a hemp rope in a way.
Oh, wow. So hemp at that time didn't have the stigma that it does today. Is that accurate?
Well, people were aware that it could be a problematic crop, certainly. So there were restrictions in growing it. Farmers had to keep extremely detailed records. You had to plant protective strips of crops to prevent that hemp from then spreading itself out into ditches and beyond its fields. It had a very low THC content, so it was difficult really to get any sort of psychoactive feel off of it. But nonetheless, it still had some of those properties. But the war trumped all at that time.
Let's talk about retail. Bloomington's downtown used to be, you know, thriving like a lot of downtowns, right? Could you talk about how that turned?
So one of the pieces I look at is JCPenney, one of three national department stores based in downtown Bloomington.
What were the other two, the national one?
Sears was downtown and Montgomery Ward's was downtown as well.
All right.
So in addition to that, you had four locally owned department stores, Livingston's, Clem's, Roland's, and during the Depression, my store, which then will go under during the Great Depression. So within roughly three or four blocks of each other, you had at one time seven department stores. So you could imagine, especially during the holiday season, how crowded downtown sidewalks would be, especially around the Courthouse Square, where a lot of these department stores were located. JCPenney moved into the Braley Field Building, which is at the northwest corner of the Courthouse Square. McGuire's Bar and Grill currently occupies the Braley Field Building, at least the first floor. So to think about a national department store inhabiting such a relatively small retail space, but such was the way things were handled back then. Of course, that begins to change with the post-war era in the late 1940s, early 1950s, with the rise of the automobile and the middle-class consumerist culture. Bloomington Normal, just like all communities of its size, begins to expand. Folks with automobiles have a little bit more mobility. You're beginning to locate factories in green spaces outside of the city center or the older manufacturing belts. And then you're going to begin to move retail. In the case of Bloomington Normal, retail then was moved out to the Route 66 Beltline, which we now know as Veterans Parkway. Beginning in the early 1960s, Kmart was really the first retailer to make a stake out on the Beltline. People thought at the time in the early 1960s that it was a somewhat foolish move, but of course we can see today how visionary that really was. And then Eastland Mall begins to be developed in the early 1960s, and in many ways that's the death knell for downtown Bloomington being the retail hub of not only the Twin Cities.
I want to talk about technology and what a disruptor technology is in general, from the internet disrupting retail so badly all over the country, including here in Bloomington and Normal. JCPenney is no longer here, and other retail. Can you talk about how technology has disrupted the Twin Cities and or McLean County over the decades, even over the century and a half?
One of the primary areas where technology has really impacted this area is in transportation. You cannot tell the history of McLean County without talking about transportation. Let's go back to the 1820s when the first Euro-Americans or white settlers were moving into this part of central Illinois. Before the arrival of railroads in the mid-1850s to this part of the state, Bloomington, which is established as the county seat of McLean County in 1831, is really a backwater county seat. It has no growth potential without the arrival of railroads. It is nearly impossible to bring large amounts of bulky commodities in or out of this part of the state until the arrival of railroads. Once railroads arrive in the 1850s, that is an utter game changer. As I like to say, you could divide the history of our local community really into two grand eras, before railroads and after railroads. And railroads first arrived in Bloomington, McLean County in 1853 with the Illinois Central Railroad in the spring. We know that now as Constitution Trail, at least its roadbed. And then in the fall, a more important railroad locally for us will come to know that as the Chicago and Alton Railroad. That rail bed still exists today as Union Pacific and Amtrak. And that is the single most important entry point into the local community for many, many decades until the rise, really, of the automobile in the 1920s, 1930s, and into the post-war era.
Well, and that dovetails, by the way, we're talking with Bill Kemp, librarian for the McLean County Museum of History. That dovetails into another issue that we're dealing with today and how much to pay people who want to come in and invest in McLean County, build in McLean County, put manufacturing in. But back in the day, there was a time, was it Union Pacific or who was it that they were thinking about moving out of town?
Chicago and Alton Railroad.
Okay, and the whole west side of Bloomington, right, was just, I mean, it was all about the railroads, like you said. It was huge. And if they would have moved out, that would have been devastating to especially the west side of Bloomington, right?
We think we are a Bloomington Normal, the Twin Cities. We are a white-collar community, and that is one of our strengths, really, in the post-industrial economy in the 21st century, based in insurance, education, medical care, and things of that nature. But Bloomington Normal, back in the 19th century, was, as were most communities of this size, it was a blue-collar community. We made things like vacuum cleaners and washing machines. And before the rise of State Farm in the 1920s and 1930s, the largest employer in the community from the time of the Civil War into the 1920s, if not a little bit later, were the Chicago and Alton Railroad shops and yards on the west side of Bloomington, literally a city unto itself. You had 1,500 to 1,800 skilled and semi-skilled men, carpenters, upholsterers, blacksmiths, tool and die makers, switchmen, brakemen, firemen, locomotive engineers, track workers, you name it. Like I said, a city unto itself, a hive of activity, because back in the 19th and into the 20th century, this nation, the world, moved by rail. So we had on the west side of Bloomington a Chicago and Alton Railroad shops where locomotives were primarily refurbished, restored, and repaired, and rolling stock was constructed and repaired as well. There was the threat to move the Chicago and Alton Railroad shops out of Bloomington to Springfield in the early 1900s. So the community banded together, both the city fathers, and back in the early 1900s, unfortunately, the city leaders were all male, and the West Side residents pooled their resources together and basically made a large cash donation and a donation of land to the Chicago and Alton Railroad to keep the shops in town, because the community realized that without the shops, the community would be in a much worse way. So we tend to think of corporate giveaways today as being relatively new, of being controversial, but in fact, that policy goes all the way back a century.
Volume 2 of Bill Kemp's Pages from the Past, a new collection of stories he's written for the Pantograph, is available at the McLean County Museum of History. You can also find it at the Garlic Press in Uptown Normal and Casey's Garden Shop in Bloomington. Kemp spoke with GLT's John Norton. You're listening to Sound Ideas on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.